Welcome to Come On You Reds, the definitive Toronto FC podcast. Another week of TFC talk. Gareth Wheeler with you alongside Sons of Anarchy, Terry Dunfield. Look for him cruising into a soccer field near you on his motorcycle. What's going on, Terry? How was the weekend?
It was great. OPDL game with the Academy Saturday morning. That went well. We beat Unionville 1-0. Our press needs a little bit more teeth. But that was a good way to start the weekend. And TFC, big second half. And it was kind of cool. I woke up Sunday morning just buzzing and so excited for Ralph Frizzo and the second half performance he had. Little CPL yesterday, hanging with you at the studio. So top weekend.
Yeah, except for that hanging with me part, right? Let's be honest.
No, that's the highlight.
On the podcast, we're going to talk, break down that 2-2 draw with New York City FC, celebrate the Canadian women's national team. Go on, gold medalists, gold medal winners. Friday, it seems like a long time ago now. We'll get into that and some thoughts across Major League Soccer as well. You just really quickly, before we get into the New York City game, you mentioned the Academy. How is life going right now inside the, you know, the BMO training grounds? I think a lot of people are kind of curious, you know, with the young guys back up and at it, TFC 2 back in the country as well. What do things look like from that perspective, Terry?
We still have a couple protocols hanging over us. So the first team use a facility till 3 p.m. every day. The Academy aren't using the building at all. So we're just coming in using the pitches in the evenings. So we're kind of on a winter schedule a little bit, but we're ticking over okay. The game plan is to play in MLS next, which is mainly an MLS-only league come September for all our academy teams. That's going to be incredible. That kind of takes over from the USSDA. But until then, we're playing in an Ontario High Performance League called OPDL. All our teams play a year up. The guys are just starting to find their rhythm. I don't think we're 100% sure how much time we've lost with the kids due to the pandemic until we play American teams, maybe. I think we're all in the same boat up here in Ontario. You know, we're struggling a little bit to repeat high-intensity runs and lacking a little bit of sharpness in our attack. But overall, it's good. And, you know, I think Ralph Prizzo, again, coming back to him already, inspiring all our academy kids with a performance like that in the second half is huge to for the kids to say, you know what, it really is attainable.
How much do you talk to your players about, like, when a Prizzo comes out and plays the way that he does? Is that an active conversation? Do you show them video? How do you approach that?
Yeah, it's funny. This morning I was cutting up tape and for our holding midfielder to say, look how well he was connected to his center halves and he's able to springboard counterattacks and he's driving into space and this can be you. You're not a million miles off. And Ralph was close to you at your age when I worked with him. It's inspiring and it's a great learning moment too for our kids. And they really connect to one of their own, really. And the big, I guess, question at the end of it, every presentation to the kids is, who's next? Who's the next Ralph Frizzo? Who's the next Jonathan Osorio? Who's the next Jaden Nelson? So it's, I love it. And I guess on Friday night, we should talk about it. TFC 2 played at home and another two Academy kids, Kosey Thompson, Kobe Franklin, guys you might not know, crushed it at the BMO training ground. So that was cool as well.
Awesome. When you say that, are they looking around the room like, is it you? Is it me? And then there's that one guy that's puffing out his chest a little bit more.
But yeah, I think that's what you'd expect, but we're so nice. Well, you can go ahead of me, mate. Like, it's me.
Yeah, that's what I'd be like. I'd be scratching and clawing. Good stuff, Terry. Keep up the good work there. I always enjoy the Terry Dunfield Academy updates. 2-2. It's a work in progress still.
Okay.
Like 100 episodes in, it's still a work in progress. 2-2 Saturday night against New York City FC. You go down 2-0, bring it all back, get that point. You kind of walked out there feeling like it was a win, but again, more drop points. And potentially that, you know, those extra 2 points that could have really galvanized the group just left on the table. Overall, before we get into the specific, your thoughts on the draw on Saturday night?
Yeah, on the result at halftime, you take a point all day. And you add in a big dog performance in the second half, chances created. I agree with you. We probably left a couple points on the table. But I don't think we were saying that coming in at halftime.
No, no kidding. It was, I said to our producer, Erica, who, by the way, is on this call, was wearing the best jacket. Like, it was an amazing jacket on Saturday night, putting me to shame. I like to kind of walk in and have my own look, but man, she's crushing it.
I'll be honest. Anyways, everyone knows where you are in that room. You've got your own look, bro.
Not sure if it's a good one, but yeah, like the highlight of the night through 45 minutes was the jacket. That's kind of what I was getting into. Because the first half. Yeah, exactly. I told her that we'd be talking about this on the pod, by the way, because the first half was a stinker. Like it really was. We said it on last week's podcast. New York City FC is a very good team, right? Like there's some real, really dangerous and talented players in attack. And I felt like over the course of the first half, it was self-inflicted wounds by Toronto FC yet again. On the goal in the 12th minute, giveaway by Gonzalez, boom, boom, boom. The players straight through, ball into the back of the net. Same thing on the goal in the 21st minute. Zavaleta gifts New York City FC to Jury with the finish. Before that, you're done your first beer, you're down 2-0, and you're like, okay, here we go again. These early goals conceded are just crushing this team.
Yeah. I thought that was, that was the breakdown, really, wasn't it? I think New York City came out seeing that maybe there's just one change in our 11. It was the third game in 7 days.
Yeah.
Just a couple of days to recover from a battle in Philly, and probably coming out on the front foot and almost swarming us was their game plan. I didn't think there was a whole bunch in it other than them punishing a couple of mistakes. And it's tough once, you know, say Omar, for example, the one he gives away, you want to make amends for it. And probably in that moment, you're better to protect the space in behind you rather than stepping back out. And it's pretty nice combination play, as Caldwell said in the broadcast, a little third man run. You're now 1-0 down. And then
it was a great run. Yeah. Terry, I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, it's worth bringing up. I mean, they were clinical, like those three passes, the interplay, Rodriguez is running behind. It was a great goal that they scored, but just the buildup to it, that's where the disappointment was.
Yeah, it didn't need to happen. Another goal that you chalk up to, you know, an individual error that just seemed to be getting punished right now. And then Zavaleta loses concentration. He's better than that. You know, I've been in that moment where you just I don't know. It's a simple pass. We get it wrong, and again, it's in the back of the net. And I thought City just started to grow and build momentum kind of off of those moments. And the press started to come in numbers and we struggled to play through it. We looked a little bit sluggish. And then the other thing I'd say in the first half, the front three of Soltalo, Pozuelo, Altidore doesn't give you a whole bunch defensively. They all want to take time on the ball. They've had success in their career doing that. I said it in the Calvary game last night in the CPL, just a lot of chefs in the kitchen and a lot of quality up top. But it didn't quite come together. So it was, I think at halftime, Perez had a big decision to make.
And he made the right one. To that point, there were multiple times in the first half where you looked out there and there's two New York City center backs that were up near midfield. And then you saw Soteldo, Pozuelo, and Altidore all behind the play. That can't happen. Like, it was putting those 7-8 with Alex Mono, TFC players that were defending in a really difficult spot at times. And then on the counterattack, it wasn't there because New York City was able to, you know, swarm in terms of numbers and make things difficult from the build-out from the back. I wanted to make a note about Zavaleta because he played on the left side of center back. And I went through my notes. I was going through previous games. I can never remember him playing on the left side of center back over the course of his 100 and whatever games with Toronto FC. Can you remember? Because he needs to focus. He needs to concentrate on that back pass. But sometimes when you're playing in a position that you're not accustomed to, you know, just the way that you're looking at the play is just a little bit different. I'm not making excuses, but I thought it was a little bit strange that Gonzalez and Zavaleta almost switched sides, because when those two have played together, it's been predominantly Gonzalez on the left.
Yeah, good point. Maybe to do with New York City's attack a little bit. I'd put it down to loss of concentration, but in our back three, 2016-17, it was Haglund on the right, more in the middle, Zavaleta on the right, Haglund on the left, yes. Bingo on the left. Yeah, I don't know if he's played there a ton. I think he's capable, but yeah.
He's predominantly a right-foot player, and more so with than when you played, this is a clear focus, right? Left-footed left center back, right-footed right center back. It's these little things sometimes. It's just something that stood out to me. And because I've just never seen Eric play on that side. They settled down after that, and the game turned into more of a scrap than anything else. I just hate to see it. Chanot, the clown at the back for New York City FC, mixes up with Soteldo. Soteldo pushes off, and then he reaches for his head. Then it kicks off. Then it's Soteldo. Or was it Pozuelo getting the yellow card, picking up the yellow card? It just, if you're going to use VAR for big calls in games, and at a time when you're booking a player, wouldn't that constitute a big time in the match where you can say, look, he's play acting? It pissed me off. And I think it pissed off the Toronto FC players even more.
No, it's a joke. We're used to seeing that a little bit in Europe, a little bit in South America. It's coming into the MLS games for sure. And I'd imagine the guys in New York are probably thinking, we need to get this out of the game. This isn't good. And I think in North America, where we maybe don't have as much history and as much kind of maybe savviness, is let's stamp this out of our game. Let's not let this continue. And imagine Chanel, if I'm Chanel watching that next day in front of my like family, I'm like, what am I doing?
Are you laughing? Are you laughing or are you?
I got my tail between my legs.
Yeah. It was Soteldo who picked up the caution. I mean, just what, like, and as cautions add up, then players face suspensions. Just someone hit me up and I never kind of thought about it that way. Thank you to whoever that was, and was like, why isn't that something that you can review? Of all the things you review in VAR, you know what I mean? Perhaps it takes you a step too far. Yeah, it can go both ways, but certainly at a time like that, justice wasn't served. And then you started to mix up down the right-hand side, and guess what? Richie Larea was in it. Like, he always is down the right-hand side. It's kicking off as well. Like, that's kind of what the game kind of dissolved into felt like what was the rest of the first half.
Yeah, I thought that was actually a moment where TFC were like, okay, enough's enough. We're not going to have it. That was like a little bit of a spark plug. And then obviously the changes at halftime changed it. But yeah, I was okay with Richie standing up for himself. And we saw Canada do that against Mexico on numerous occasions. They go, you know what, we're not going to be bullied, especially at home.
I was fine with it too, but it almost kind of suited New York at that time. Yeah, delay. Yeah, you know, be pissed off. Like, TFC wasn't playing in that first half. It was like 12 shots to 3. Everything was going against them until halftime. And that's when the game changed. Sometimes you just need to get into that room and have that talk and have that time to readjust. Whatever was said at halftime, I'm sure it was loud and poignant, but it was the two changes that were made through 45 minutes as well, and two big calls as Prizo and Achara come on for Bradley and Altidore. And it seemed to just change the game, Terry. You know, sometimes, you know, you light a spark or you create a spark and then it catches on fire. And that's kind of seems like what happened after 45 minutes, because it wasn't just the goals that came, just the overall energy, the speed, just everything to do with the game, the commitment. It was just all a step more.
Yeah, we went back to front real quick. New York kind of got caught in no man's land, whether they were pressing, whether they were sitting off. We were first to everything. We were winning duels. I felt a little bit for Josie and Michael, because it could have been anyone that came off, and you're now watching on the sideline and it's a different team all of a sudden. certain players have a skip to their staff. I thought the changes suited Pozuelo. He came in a little bit more central and things started to go through him. But just the pure energy, the legs of Achara in behind, the distance Ralph's able to cover, it allowed Oso and Markey to play a little bit higher. Just everything, as you said, was a little bit quicker. And it was kind of cool to see BMO Field kind of get off their seats and kind of really urge the team forward.
Well, if you really look at it, I suggested on last week's podcast, pat myself on the back here a little bit, that I think that this team needs to be a little bit younger in terms of the personnel that it has on the field. And there's a way to do it, making sure you can bring on some legs, some energy, some quickness into the team. I'm not talking about sweeping changes. I'm just talking about a player here or there. And that's what it added, Terry. Like, I stand by that MLS specifically is going younger, more athletic, quicker. Like, not even by the year, not even by the month. I'm talking like by week to week. Younger and younger players are being provided a platform to go out and play. And the game is quick. The game is fast. It's still technical as well, but I just think that is kind of the best way forward, is making sure that you understand in what positions and at what time you can bring on the young guns to go and do their thing and give them a platform to really make a difference. And that's what it was. It was less about Bradley or Altidore and more about the players that came on.
For sure. Yeah, that's a good point. Aronson, 17-year-old, scores a goal yesterday. Yeah. What a goal that was, by the way. But and sometimes a younger player will come on and, you know, be a little bit fearless, take some more risk. And you know what, at 2-0 down, you don't have a whole bunch to lose. I understand Javier Perez's methodology a little bit, and that maybe before deploying the young players, and he's had a very young bench for every game, is the team needed a bit of stability. The first five games since he took over as caretaker, 2 wins, 3 draws. So he started to, okay, yes, his senior group's kind of helped us stop the rot, turn the corner. I'm going to trust in these guys. Maybe it was one game too many against Philly, and he should have freshened it up. But he learned from that. And at halftime, it was a bold move to take off the cornerstones of our franchise that so much success have come through. And you know, I don't think many people would have had the stones to do that.
No. With Bradley, he's played every minute this season. Think about the fixture buildup and congestion. Just as a player, I know he wants to be out there. He's such a warrior. The commitment is second to none. Like, he leads this club in so many ways, but, you know, 3 games in 7 days, perhaps it's just a step too much at this point. Like, he's gone through some serious surgery, Terry, and he's got back out there and never complains, doesn't make excuses, just goes out there and plays. So perhaps at this stage of his career, there's going to have to get the most out of the player. There might have to be an acknowledgement, like 3 games in 7 days, that might be a little bit too much, because a fresh Michael Bradley is still very effective in this league. And it's not like, you know, sometimes you see like Harry Maguire almost played the entire Premier League season at center back each and every game. Center back's a lot different than central midfield and some of the requirements there. You can speak to that specifically, the demands of a central midfield player to play week in, week out. So the last time, by the way, Bradley was taken off in a game, July 15th, 2018. So look, you might need a little bit more rotation at that position.
Yeah. There's definitely more demands than it center back. And early on in the year too, he was playing as a 10. He was everywhere. He was part of our press. He was driving us forward from midfield. So he's a little bit more into the role he's played, a little bit deeper the last few games under Javier Perez. But he's a proud man. It'll be difficult for him coming off, but it was great to see him off his feet, cheering the team on the bench. I thought that was a fantastic just moment for our captain to say, I'm still in. I'm all in, guys. I'm all for one. And then agreed. Maybe start to look at things a little bit more big picture, Wheels. And it's tricky for Javier Perez and his staff now, because it's kind of been game to game. Let's just get through this game. Let's get through that game. And he's navigated through it quite well. But if you're going game to game, it's difficult to kind of put together a strategy of, okay, I've got three games here. I can rest Michael for this one. 60 minutes, I'll get out of self-health of this game, where we're not putting on all our biggest players, our best pieces, and trying to get a result in 90 minutes. And then, okay, now let's focus on the next game. Okay, I'm going to do the same thing again, rather than kind of planning out maybe the next five games and the best system to fit the opposition, freshness, and probably one of the principles that I picked up on Javier Perez is it's an adaptable team. He's okay to change systems, yeah, and be a little bit flexible. And I think the team's put together around the opposition a little bit. But yeah, let's think a little bit further ahead and make sure our guys are firing on all cylinders for 90 minutes.
Just lastly on Altidore, I know the Akinola injury probably affected things, but the last couple of games where he started, it's been a bit of a struggle. Three offsides, just 11 touches on the ball in 45 minutes, Terry. Is he a better player right now until he's back to full match fitness to be coming off the bench and changing games? Because when he's come off the bench during the game, he's made a real difference, right? Against a back line that's a little bit less fresh. His physical presence, his ability to lead that line just seems like it might be a little bit more better placed until he's back ticking over nicely to be a player that comes on and gives you half an hour rather than going from the start.
Yeah, good point. Good question. I'd probably say if I'm Jozy Altidore on Saturday, playing in a front three with Pozuelo, so Telda wasn't a great fit for me. I was starved of service. New York City smothered us playing out of the back. We didn't really figure it out pressing as a three. They played past our first line quite easily, which allowed New York City to have sustained attack. So I would just say that, I don't know, I'd write maybe Saturday off and go, okay, you know, if you're going to play Jozy, okay, he needs some legs around him in a particular game plan to suit his qualities. And, it just didn't work on Saturday. I still think he's a top player and he can be effective.
Yeah, yeah. When Achara came off, he was immediately involved. I think that you said it just a few moments ago. Pozuelo is playing a little bit of a different role. And I think for the first time this season, we saw the real Alejandro Pozuelo. We saw the MVP pause out there in the second half, because that goal that he set up to Larrea in the 49th minute, that ability to drive past a player, he's kind of been playing with the defenders in front of him, but his ability to drive and play those slip passes in behind the back line, there's no one better in Major League Soccer than doing that. And it was vintage Pozuelo and vintage Larrea linking up for that goal in the 49th minute.
Yeah, he does so well. I think the scouting report on him is you can't give him time and space, but as soon as he sucks you in, you're now giving up space in behind, and it's a great slip pass to Richie Larrea. I thought Ralph did well to kind of read a flick around the corner, picked off a pass. And then Pozuelo had a lot to do, and he just let the play develop a little bit by drawing New York City into him. But it's, I think that's a good point. You at the last maybe three or four games, Pozuelo and Soteldo have been sharing the keys to the team. And it's almost been the Soteldo show, and the MVP has kind of stepped back and you know what he said, okay, Soteldo, I'll work around you. But in the second half, he took over and we saw his qualities.
Yeah. It's what they were. You tried to figure out how to best use Pozuelo over the course of the 2 years, previous to this. And it's him playing in that little bit of a free role, more centrally, the prototypical number 10, where you can get the most out of this player. And then you almost need to shape the team around him. Is that fair to say?
A little bit. I'd say defensively too, just. All he's got to do is maybe take care of a six and then give him the freedom to really just dictate the tempo of the game, dictate the tempo of the attack. And as you said, the team kind of move around him a little bit. And he's got that much quality that he's going to create four or five moments guaranteed in a game. You'll be frustrated with him at times defensively, but he's just got too much quality for MLS. He's just such a top playmaker.
And he owns New York City FC. Like, you know what? Like, whenever he sees the baby blue, that's his trigger color, because he's now scored 7 goals in 8 games against New York City FC. That's more goals than he scored against any other club side over the course of his career. The goal came in the 56th minute. He might have finished it, but two young players in Prizo and Achara, they were all over it. Terry, do you want to walk us through that goal that came in the 56th minute? It was a wonderful goal, start to finish.
Yeah, it was actually Omar was involved. He wins a header. Ralph picks up some scraps. And I think in that position, Michael Bradley looks to find players in the half space or pass the ball. But Ralph's got that ability to drive the team up the pitch with the ball, drives maybe 20 yards, finds Achara, who bends his run really well. You can't quite see it on the TV cameras, how he kind of comes low and builds speed to receive it, kind of past the last line in New York City. And then I don't know if Pozuelo is known for this, but he makes up about 40 yards on the weak side to get into a spot to tap it in. The detail of the pass from Achara is great as well. He doesn't just kind of feel it into space. He almost wraps it across the pitch. The timing of the pass and the execution is excellent, and Pozuelo sticks it in the back of the net.
Very unselfish by Achara as well. He could have had to go himself, Terry. Instead, squares it for the MVP.
Are you saying you're shooting from there?
He could have. I thought he was going to go 1v1 with the goalkeeper. Not every player squares it across like that. It was well done by Achara. It was the right decision. I'm just saying he could have had to go himself. You don't agree?
It's unselfish. It's great execution, good vision. Not an easy technique on the run. But when Pozuelo's calling for it, he just runs 40 yards.
I can't tell you how many times on a weekly basis you see the player at the far post, like, and he doesn't get the ball. Oh, like, I could have totally seen that happening. By the way, Achara must like playing against New York City as well. That's just his third MLS game. Two of them have come against New York City, goal and assist, and helped change that game on the weekend as well. And I'm not sure, it was a few minutes later, I think it was the 60th minute, that there was the other chance at the left-hand side with Soteldo and Pozuelo, and Achara was on the far post, and Pozuelo got taken. Like, it didn't stop there. Like, those three combining, there was balance to this group, to the group. Achara was adding that little bit more of a threat over the top. I thought it just worked. They were moving freely. They were allowing their natural creativity to kind of dictate the attack as well. I thought in the first half, a player like Larea was playing far too back. He was pushed way forward in the second half as well. It was just, you're thinking to yourself, yeah, this is more like it. Like, the entire second half had a completely different feel to it.
Totally. It became almost a little bit implicit, and you started to see our players' personalities in the right moment. And another point we should probably bring up, playing at home makes a huge difference. The South Stand almost sucks that ball into the goal, and the energy you start to feed off of just creates momentum. I think that's important. And you're not playing in, like, okay, it's pretty humid in Toronto right now, but you're not in Florida where you're just struggling to get through the last 15 minutes. I thought if the game went another 10 minutes, we go on and win it. And that's their game in 7 days. I thought Soteldo and Lawrence started to link up nicely. De Leon had a nice chance at the near post in extra time. Sean Johnson makes a good save. But it was... Yeah, I'd imagine today coming into the training ground or a cool down yesterday, the boys have a skip to their step and, okay, you know, we beat New England once, let's keep this going. And, you know, it's a good point. We're trying to get to 9 in the next 4 games.
Well, I hope so, because the other results around them kind of didn't go their way, because by virtue of yet another home draw, TFC drops to the bottom of the Eastern Conference. Would that bother you going to the training ground this week? despite, you know, that really good second half performance?
No. You know, when you have a crappy month and you spend a lot of money and you don't really want to look at your bank account, and you just kind of go, okay, I'll take a look at it next month.
Yes.
I'm doing some invoicing. It's going to be good. I'll hide this from Brenna, but we're going to be good because, you know, I put a shift in. I've been working hard. So it's kind of like that. I'd say, like, I think we're just past halfway. We don't need to be eyeballing other results at the table just yet. Just continue trusting in the process. I know fans hate to hear that, but it was a big dog second half performance. I think there's some great learnings we can take out of that game. By no means are Bradley and Altidore not going to be key pieces moving forward. But I think if I'm Javier Perez, I've unlocked something there. And I think I can change my team around a little bit. And just the last piece I'd say, Wheels, is for young players, you still have to earn trust. And I don't think anything's given to you. I think you have to earn that opportunity. And Ralph, he took a massive step forward on Saturday. That was a different Ralph Prizzo than we've seen. And he was almost unshackled. And I think he said to the coach, you know what? You can trust me now. And I've taken my game to another level.
Awesome. Well put. Just we record our after 90 minutes, kind of right around where some fans are walking out in the north end of the stadium. And the sense was, yeah, that was a really good second half, but man, like, four games at home now and four draws. Like, they haven't been able to go home celebrating the win, right? Like, I feel like once that happens, perhaps it's Saturday night against New England, you know, that pep in your step, that extra bounce is there. It's like, yeah, okay, we're seeing some good things, but now these draws simply need to be turned into wins.
They do, for sure. And I don't think you can sugarcoat that too much. But I still think we've got to find out who we are under Javier Perez and find our identity. And these marginal gains that we're making, I think they start to build a little bit of a foundation. And we saw a fun team to watch. That was an entertaining team to watch in the second half. It was dynamic. And the team kind of banded together through a little bit of adversity of taking your stars off.
The frustrating part of this all is the goals conceded, Terry. Like, again, yet another game.
You're like the Grim Reaper.
No, but this is the reality right now.
It is. You're right.
TFC hasn't had a clean sheet since in 14 consecutive games. This is the longest streak without a clean sheet. And you'll remember this because you were on the team in 2013 to start the season, 14 consecutive games without a clean sheet. And when you're giving up goal, it doesn't matter. It can be seven. It can be one. It impacts and affects the game. Like, this is a long stretch without a clean sheet. And that's how you're going to be able to go around and turn around results. By, it sounds simple, but not conceding, right? Yeah. You were on that team to start the season in 2013.
What it does is it just knocks the wind out of your sails a little bit. It's just like, oh, and especially the types of goals we're conceding it. We're not seeing teams sticking it in the top bin or incredible play. Like, probably 10 or 11 of the 14, you'd be like, man, we could do better there. It's self-inflicted. So it's, and then all of a sudden you're now chasing a game, which we all know is difficult to do in MLS due to the conditions. You're a little bit vulnerable, you're a little bit fragile, you've got to regroup. And, you know, at times the group has done that and has shown grit, but, you know, at this stage of the year, we can't keep giving ourselves a mountain to climb. And I'm sure the players know that.
Yeah. Now the good news though, Terry, and I'm not going to be the Grim Reaper here. things don't really change in terms of where you're chasing. Actually, TFC was able to pick up a point on the seventh place team. That's the bar. That's the level that you need to be in the Eastern Conference. It's Columbus Crew who lost on the weekend. They're on 24 points. So instead of being 10 points back of seventh place, you're 9 points back. I mean, small margin, small levels, but still the task is there. Now you have to jump over Montreal, Red Bulls, Atlanta, Chicago, Miami, Cincinnati to do so. But at the same time, that 9-point gap, if it gets back into double digits, you're going to be like, oh man, maybe it's end game here. But as long as you're in single digits with 16 more games to go, that's plenty of time.
For sure. And okay, New England on Saturday, and then we play Atlanta, Inter Miami, Montreal, Cincinnati all the way from home. But I think we can kind of fly under the radar into those games. And you pick up 3 points there. That it's like a six-pointer.
Yeah. Anything else you want to point out about the game on Saturday night? I really like the game that Marky Delgado and Oso played along with Parizo in that second half. I thought they were very good as well. It was interesting. Eric Zavaleta kind of limped off the field late in the game. Perez was forced to bring on Justin Morrow to play at center back. That was something that was mentioned to me that Morrow could do ahead of the season if TFC needed a player at that position, as Chris Mavinga was unavailable on Saturday night.
Gives you a little bit of recovery pace, gives you a nice left footer on that side to play out. The only thing I'd say is we started to find gaps. We were a little bit more dynamic. We got in behind their back line, so they dropped, and then you're finding Oso and Pozuelo in the kind of half space areas between lines. So we were just less predictable and so much more fluent. And I think guys were just more comfortable in the shape in the second half. And I think for the first time in a little while too, the players enjoyed themselves out there in the second half.
So Saturday night, it doesn't get any easier for Toronto FC. They take on New England Revolution. Last time TFC played them, they beat them in New England. 3-2 was the final back on July 7th. Since that time, New England 1-0 win over Atlanta, 5-0 Inter Miami, 2-1 over Montreal, 3-2 over Red Bulls, level goalless draw against Nashville, and then a 2-1 win on the weekend over Philadelphia. Last time we played them, no Tajon Buchanan, no Matt Turner. It's going to be a tough one Saturday night at BMO Field, Terry.
Yeah, and we're talking about teams sticking the ball in the top corner and scoring some good goals. That's all New England seemed to do. Gustavo Bo's been on fire. What an angry, aggressive shot he's got. They've got various weapons too. Buxa, Bunbury, Heels, a top operator. So are you going to jump in there?
No.
Okay, I'll keep going. I think Matt Polster has been giving them a little bit more presence than maybe Caldwell in midfield. Their threat on set pieces. I think a part of their identity under Bruce Arena is to press high a little bit, ensure there's pressure on the ball carrier. So TFC will have to deal with that. They don't give you a whole bunch, but they do concede goals. So I think there will be opportunities. And I think too, maybe they might not bring everybody. They've got a free week leading up to that game, but they also have DC and Cincinnati Wednesday, Saturday. So that might come into consideration for Bruce Arena. But watching them play, I've seen them play the last couple of games. When you're top of the league, you're trying to get into the team. Everyone's just buzzing. They're a confident team, and everybody wants the ball right now. Everyone wants to showcase what they can do. There's definitely some European eyes on this squad, and I know Bruce Arena worked hard to keep everybody together. And then it's almost like, okay, let's have a push for MLS Cup, and then everyone can kind of go their ways, separate ways.
It's kind of crazy how Bruce Arena comes in and just changes the mentality, the makeup of that team completely. You know, he's the fixer in Major League Soccer. You know, Mike from Breaking Bad, you know, there'd be like some problem. Mike would just come in and clean it up. That's what Bruce Arena is. It's just ridiculous. The most points and the most goals in Major League Soccer for New England. But like I said, TFC beat them the last time these two teams played. TFC were down players. You beat them in New England 3-2. Over the course of your playing career, if you got one over on a really good team, I'm sure that had a knock-on effect to the next time you played them.
Yeah, for sure. It's in the back of your mind, I think. To New England will be probably, I don't think they'll dwell on it. I think the last 15 minutes we were under a pretty good siege that we were able to see through. I'd say we need 3 points. I don't think we're playing for a point. I think there will be opportunities if we get our football right. I think we've got to be brave on the night. We're at home and just continue that momentum from the second half. And I think Perez has some big decisions to make, what that starting 11 will look like for TFC, which will keep Bruce Arena guessing a little bit. I think the biggest thing he did in New England, when he talked about being a fixer, is he just went back to basics. He said, look, let's be difficult to beat. We're not going to give up crappy goals. We'll build from the back. And then he's had some money to spend, and, you know, Heel's turned into, you know, a Pozuelo for New England. Bo's come in. He's been different class. He's been able to bring in Buxa, who gives him a threat up top. They've got some real athletic, wide players that love to get forward. But at times, their center halves are a little bit isolated.
Yeah. With the experience in this TFC team and the quality, they're not going to be scared or nervous or overwhelmed by what New England brings to the table. I think it's more about just TFC just executing their game, to be honest with you. And if they do, then they can hang with the big boys. This is what I keep on saying about this team. It's a group full of skilled, some very good players that can go out and beat anyone in this league on their day. It's just been an inconsistent, not even game to game, just inconsistent moments within games that have kind of come back to cost Toronto FC. So they're going to have a complete game. I think the full week off in between games will do wonders for TFC. And the fact that they're playing at home, that's to their advantage as well on Saturday night. Should be a great one.
Yeah. Yeah. I think playing under the lights again at BMO, just your spidey sense heightens a little bit. You're playing against a team top of the league. You know you can't give up anything, or you're going to be punished against New England again. Spidey sense heightened. And then, not to repeat myself, but I'm interested to see what our 11 will look like. It'll be some big decisions to be made in that coaching room.
Editor's note, Terry and I have had to reconvene because literally an hour after this podcast was recorded, some news was delivered. And I'm not talking about Lionel Messi to PSG. Lionel Messi to TFC would have been nice. But the club has decided to keep on Javier Perez as the interim head coach and keep him on for the rest of the year. Terry, 2-1-4 in 7 games as manager, coming away with 10 points. We're not privy to everything that goes on behind the scenes, but clearly this is an indication that the club is comfortable and likes what's happening and transpiring behind the scenes.
Yeah, very much so. Stability is a word football loves, and I think he's brought in that to the club. It was a difficult time when he took over on the back of that result in D.C. You're then having a way trip to New England. Great result there. Tons of resilience to get over the line, followed up by a good point in Orlando. And bar the Philly away result, I think Perez and the players have been fantastic. And it's I think this buys him a little bit of breathing space, and he can now start to make some plans a little bit big picture how he wants to deploy his roster.
But within the academy, what have you heard about Perez and what has actually changed, if anything at all?
Nothing's changed on our end. There's maybe not the red tape through the club that there was when Greg Vanney was here. It's a little bit more of a first team, especially, and I think that's been heightened too because the first team was down in Florida,
right?
But they're kind of operating with the second team a little bit, and now as an entity, the academy, where our role or mandate is to produce professional players for our second and first team. So nothing changes on our end. I'm happy for him. I think him and his staff have worked hard for this opportunity. What's important is the entire club keeps pushing.
Yeah, to be clear, in the release, it says the interim tag is being taken off and he will be the head coach for the remainder of the season. But it does still seem that there might be that interim tag looming over top before a long-term decision is made. Is he going to have to do something pretty spectacular in order to be in the running for whoever is going to take this job long-term?
I think the expectations at Toronto FC are extremely high. And yeah. You know, if we're brutally honest, Javier Perez and his coaching staff to really put their foot forward, I think they're going to have to make the playoffs. And if TFC make the playoffs, the job's probably his. The football world can be cruel. And if the team continues to grow and Bill and Ellie, the front office, the board, see that there's enough, why not? But he's probably overachieved. I'd say, I don't know if this was the initial plan after the DC game for all the staff to stay on. This is just Terry speaking. But I think not only have the coaching staff galvanized amongst themselves in adversity, I think the players have bought into it as well. And in tough times, it's kind of banded everyone together. And probably the biggest thing I've seen is just absolute clarity on the field, especially defensively. We stopped shifting too many goals.
Yeah, no kidding. Congratulations to Javier and the rest of the staff. They've worked hard through a very difficult time. And right now, consistency is king as Toronto FC try to pick up enough points to really get back in that playoff picture.
Not only have we stopped conceding as many goals, I think there's been a shift in the game model, the style of play, and it's a little bit closer to how Greg Vanney played with a little bit more possession, numbers behind the ball, a little bit less of a middle block, aggressive press, two banks of four.
Some interesting results across Major League Soccer this past weekend. Miami finally won. LAFC, after trading away Marc-Anthony Kaye, they lose 2-1 again. Red Bulls lose to Chicago. It's been kind of a little bit of an up and down run across the league, hasn't it? That, you know, Atlanta's showing some signs of life. They beat Columbus on the weekend. So, look, I think there's lots of twists and turns to come. It's very difficult for me to get a read on who's going where and what's actually happening across Major League Soccer right now.
Yeah, there's always a couple crazy results kind of middle of the summer where a team will have injuries or a team's a little bit beaten up or a new manager's come in and now all of a sudden that group's galvanized for a couple games. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. The Marc-Anthony Kaye is an interesting one that, you know, LAFC's a team that players around the world will want to come to. And I think he's getting close to, you know, knocking on the door of a DP contract. I think they'll want it to be paid there. LAFC were like, no, that doesn't work for our pay structure, I'd imagine. And, you know, maybe Marc-Anthony Kaye is going to go to Colorado and get paid, or there's a bigger play that, you know, he's kind of Colorado en route to Europe at some point.
Yeah, they've lost back-to-back games, LAFC, as we keep our eye on the Canadians playing across Major League Soccer. We're expecting an announcement for where Canada will play their World Cup qualifying games. That's to come this week. If you follow me at Gareth Wheeler, you can probably figure out where the games are going to be played. It's going to be much more relevant to all of us in a matter of days. So we're looking forward to that.
Very subtle.
And there's reason to start flying that flag and start making plans on how you're going to support the Canadian men's national team for these upcoming World Cup qualifiers in September. In the first series of games, Honduras and El Salvador at home, United States away in Nashville. This team's going to need your backing. Much like this country got behind the Canadian women's national team. Congratulations to Bev Priestman, Christine Sinclair, Stephanie Labbe and company, as they went on to win the gold medal on Friday. Well, I guess it was Friday morning here in penalties. It was 1-1. They came back from being a goal down and they won in penalties. I think just about everyone in this country caught a piece of the game, and just a massive moment for Canadian soccer, Terry. Just, I think it's still clear in our memories what happened in 2012 in the semis of the Olympics against the United States that made beating the U.S. that much sweeter, but going on to then win the gold medal after, it just made the entire equation feel complete and made it feel like we've gone, you know, full cycle here.
For sure. It's tough to get over the line at the end of a pretty grueling tournament, and speaking of grueling, the penalty shootout, just kind of watching everything play out. It was almost surreal. It's pretty incredible what the women achieved, gold medal. I just don't think it's quite sunk in. I think it's going to just carry on the momentum in our country. I don't think, and I mean this, in a real positive way, that it's necessarily a watershed moment. I think it just is another huge moment for Canadian soccer, and we just continue to grow. And our game right now is just on absolute steroids. You know, what Alphonso Davies, Jonathan David are doing in Europe, or, you know, our men's national team, our women win gold. It's just, we just go from strength to strength. TFC, what they've done in MLS over the last 5 years. We have a Canadian Premier League right now. Our industry in this country is in a place it's never been before. And I think if you just keep adding up these moments, the game continues to grow. And one of the nice indicators for me, on Saturday, driving to that OPBL game past schools and parks, all I'm seeing is soccer. Everyone's playing soccer in the field. It's so cool. It's special to watch and, you know, play a small role.
The Canadian women's team, they worked so hard. I don't think they might have been the technically the best team at that tournament, but the teamwork, the commitment, the effort, I mean, it was just all off the charts. Ashley Lawrence is a phenomenal soccer player. If you're not aware of her or her game, have a watch. She is sensational. With all that said, does this change anything for soccer in this country, Terry? Like, I was still basking in celebration, then a massive conversation is now happening about the state of the game in the country. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it just puts more pressure on moving the dial to, you know, maybe having a professional women's team in Canada at some point. But I think once we move in that direction, and I think it'll happen, one of the keys, and I'm stating the obvious here, it's got to be sustainable. And it can't just be, okay, it's we're going to try this. I think the economics have to work. And a little bit like the CPL, and for us to get a NWSL team off the ground, or maybe start our own league, it's a big play. And for us to pull that off in our country, we've all got to work together. And it can't Yes. be one or two voices. And if we work together, like we saw with the CPL, and now Canadian Championships, we're seeing with John Herdman on the men's side, you know, left a nice legacy on the women's side, that you put a system in place. And I think that that's what we need to do. And that was a lot of words, but we have to collectively work together and have a big picture strategy. And it's not just going to be one or two voices.
That's exactly what I have written down. Work together. Soccer in this country for so long has been tribal. It's about being about me and not we. This has to be done collectively together from the top down. Look, like basic things, getting information right. Like there's this misnomer that you couldn't watch the Canadian women's national team over recent years. Every single Canadian women's national team game was on One Soccer. Now, if other people don't want to publicize or let people know that it's on that channel, well, there's not much you can do, right? The Olympics are a huge platform, but it's a huge platform for all sports. Damian Warner and decathlon. If you're a skateboard fan, you might like that. You're going to have big viewership, a lot of eyeballs, but you need to let people know where they can see you and how they can see you. And right now in this country, we have certain groups that are investing heavily into soccer in this country. Instead of saying, well, what else? Why don't we embrace what we have and understand that we are still building an industry in this country, top to bottom? And you said it, sustainable. It requires investment. It requires sweat equity. It requires people who are dedicating themselves. And we have a lot of these things right now, but do you know what the most important thing is? The first one, the investment. It's the thing that drives everything. Without Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment investing in Toronto FC, would any of this that's come after happen the way that it has? Probably not, Terry. But once one group takes the leap, others will come on board. You start building a professional industry, and that's what we're trying to do. And I hope that we can all play nice in the sandbox and utilize what we have to make that bigger, rather than going out and kind of try to pick apart the forces that be that are kind of working to build something in this country.
Yeah, well said. Big picture, man. So proud of our women and what they achieved. And going back to what you said, it wasn't just one or two difference makers. They that group was tested and they stuck together and in their own kind of way that they found a way. And a pretty cool moment for Christine Sinclair to kind of finish off maybe like that.
I cannot wait, because we haven't been able to properly celebrate. There was going to be like a home game last year celebrating Christine Sinclair's record-setting goal. Now, I'm sure as soon as they can, authorities allow them to, there'll be a national tour. They're getting stadiums across this country so you can go properly celebrate Sinclair and the rest of the gold medal winning team. And that'll be something pretty cool and pretty special that we can look forward to. Look, they're absolute legends, Olympic champions, just an incredible accomplishment. And we're proud of everyone involved in that program and in Canadian soccer. And we hope that everyone got to go enjoy that on Friday. It was cool being able to call that game on the radio as well. I think I'm still exhausted from 120 minutes plus penalties. It was an emotional roller coaster. Just awesome. Anything else, Terry? I'm just about done this week.
No, all good.
Saturday night, BMO Field, New England Revolution. An 8 p.m. kickoff you can watch on TSN. Good stuff, Terry. Where are you cruising to this week on your motorcycle?
lots of time up at the training ground, working hard.
Good stuff. Coach Badass, Terry Dunfield. We want to thank our producer, Erica, as well. We'll see you all at BMO Field on Saturday. On behalf of everyone here at Toronto FC, I am Gareth Wheeler, and this has been Come On Your Reds.